dad's computer group. I asked them the same question that I'll ask you right now. How many of you, show of hands please, totally for net neutrality? You believe at your very core that it is your right to have net neutrality. Raise your hands highly and proudly. I'm going to look around like I do with my students, see who's not. You're not raising your hand, R. Kent. No? Okay, so you're not for net neutrality because you work for an ISP. No.
I was going to say, you can't tell from your shirt.
No, I can't. Oh, there, my goodness. But a lot of people, you have your, you don't have a Ah, well, that's pretty good. That's all right. That just brings me to my first slide. Net neutrality, and that is the internationally recognized logo for net neutrality. What is net neutrality? It's the principle behind, quote, public information networks that aspire to treat all content, sites and platforms equally. That is a quote from Professor Tim Wu of Columbia University, my alma mater, who actually coined the term net neutrality about 15 years ago. So he's big daddy of net neutrality, Tim Wu. So now you know, there's your definition. What's your name? Monique? Oh, I absolutely. But let me first say, what do you think that means? So we'll start, Monique, why don't we just start with you? I like Q&A, by the way. What do you think that means? There are different constituencies here, but I think that's part of it. Who is everyone? Kathy? It could be all of these things. So you're talking about in terms of a consumer perspective. You may be discussing it more from a business perspective of what we call an edge provider. We call these people edge provider. Who are edge providers? Well, that's an edge provider, Amazon.com, as we'll see. But you have your hand up. Good. Correct. So that's the consumer. You're looking at the content. That's where the edge provider is really very keen. I want my content to be treated exactly like everybody else's. And what Monique, and what's your name?
Mark.
What Monique and Mark are really talking about is I, end user, customer of an internet service provider, we refer to them, of course, as ISPs, I want to be treated the same. Hi. No volume discounts. Well, it depends on whose volume discount you want to talk about it. If you want to get one as a customer, I'm all for it. You know, in terms of, you know, you want to buy 3 years and get a discount? As long as they don't slow your service down. That's the difference. Yes?
Yeah, I was just going to bring up the speed issue. Even though I may not have Netflix, my kids do, they want to jump on and watch a movie while they're sitting at the DMV. Okay, I want to have the same speed they do. Even though I may not have Netflix, I want to have it accessible to me if I want.
Okay, that's... Ah, okay, and what's your name?
Charlene.
All right, so Charlene is focusing on something a little bit different here than the notion of the discount. She wants the access. She wants the access, but she, you know, the big question that I pose to you is, at what cost? Right, so a lot of you want net neutrality. Now that you might have a better idea of what net neutrality means, you presumably would be in favor, right?
Does it mean that all sites, like sites
Oh yeah, let me elaborate a little bit, because I'm anticipating that there might be some legitimate questions about it. So there's Amazon.com. Okay. Everybody, I'm not even going to ask how many of you have heard of Amazon.com. Okay. You all know Amazon.com quite well. You may actually even be an Amazon Prime customer. You go on Amazon to do a lot of your shopping. How many of you have done business with Jet.com? How many have heard of Jet.com? Okay, so what do you know, Mark, about Jet.com? Kathy, what do you know?
They are
competing now neck and neck for a segment of the marketplace that Amazon wants to dominate. Jet.com, articles about it in major newspapers like the New York Times. They want to beat Amazon at Amazon's game. In a world where there is no net neutrality, Amazon and I'll call myself Comcast, the ISP. Amazon and Comcast can enter into a contract to divert your internet traffic, your surfing, to that site, because they can discriminate where your traffic on the internet goes. The fundamental issue of net neutrality is that you don't own the pipeline. The ISPs own the pipeline. The pipeline is that wired connection, that broadband connection into your house. And you don't own it on your smartphone. You're talking about mobile broadband when they're sitting at the DMV. I got this phone last year, so I could do exactly that in airports. I can catch up on all my favorite HBO programs sitting in an airport with LTE service. But if my carrier wanted to cut a deal with Showtime, where Showtime would be the exclusive carrier of, let's say, Sprint, without the principles of net neutrality in place, that would be possible. So that's the issue. Does that make more sense to you now? Out net neutrality, you can discriminate. Now, they would not argue, by the way, that's to the disadvantage of the consumer at all. They will say, no, it's very much to your advantage. Why? Because we can cut a great deal. So forget about this Jet. Who wants to go to Jet.com? We've got a sweetheart deal with Amazon.com. So they can get a deal there. They'll get money back from Amazon, from the edge provider. And they could decide to pass that saving along to you. Mark.
I think so far has, forgive me, danced around the definition of what net neutrality is about. Basically, as I understand it, net neutrality would be the opposite of preference given by ISPs in terms of speed and cost and access to the internet.
Yes. What I'm not dancing about, because we're going to dance that dance big time today, because I'm going to talk about the report and order that the FCC issued this year, which was an about face. But to do that, we have to understand, Mark, what's at stake here. And since a lot of people really didn't have an understanding of what's at stake with net neutrality, I pose it in the negative, in the sense that what does it look like to have a world without net neutrality? It's a world that's dominated by internet service providers for what they consider to be a privately owned pipeline into your home. And they do own it. And they are right in that sense. They are right. They own it. They've developed it. They don't own the backbone of the internet. But they own the pipeline, that last mile into your house. And if they don't, and you have your own internet connection and you are your own ISP, well, then you can control it. They're not saying that, you know, that you don't have the right to access the internet as you see fit. What they say is you don't have the right to use their pipeline to access the internet as you see fit. They see the internet fundamentally as proprietary. That they can cut their own deals if they went, they can slow you down on certain services, they can block you. That's what they want. The FCC, by the way, historically has been pretty deferential to the industry. But that all changed in the starting really about 2010, but especially last year, as I'll explain. So you've got Amazon, you've got Jet. The big problem here is that Amazon's huge and Jet's an upstart. And Jet is actually one of the better upstarts. Maybe there's a site that you're developing or your kids are developing that you want to try to bring out market to people who use the internet. You would have to cut a deal with a large ISP corporation like Time Warner or Verizon just to get a fast connection. And it may be that you're not going to have the money to compete in that marketplace. That is what edge providers, people like Jet.com, but also other big data, I call them data hogs, you might call them data guzzlers, that's what they're all concerned about. So your president discussed, actually, Kathy, you discussed a patch workaround for Facebook so you can get the posts you want to see. Now, of course, Facebook doesn't really want that. And eventually, they'll come and depatchify it because they need you to watch their advertising. But that advertising is increasingly, of course, streaming. These are data hogs, these sites. Facebook is an example. This is one of my students. She has nine videos posted. Commercial sites, it's not only social network. Back here now at Amazon Prime, people stream. That's what people want to do with the internet. But if you want to take the ISP's perspective here, this costs them money. They see this as a big giveaway to these companies. Because these companies are basically using their pipeline to suck up all of this data streaming. It's not only Amazon, it's Hulu, and it's news services that allows millennials to be cord cutters, to basically cut their cable cord. CBS offering now live TV streamed over the internet. HBO, for the first time ever, you don't have to buy a basic cable or basic satellite service and then upgrade a tier to the premium tier to get HBO. You can buy HBO now directly online. It's real easy. But it takes up a lot of data infrastructure. It takes up the pipeline. And so the perspective, the view of the ISP is that it's not fair. They see it fundamentally as a fairness issue. Why? Because these sites are getting this great benefit. You can go and watch and stream and stream and stream, but they're not paying for it. And they're crowding out other sites, so is the claim, because it causes data congestion. And I'm not even getting to issues like BitTorrent, which was really what caused the major Supreme Court case in the last decade having to do with net neutrality, the Comcast case. Basically, pirating films or using file sharing services. But it's a real challenge for the industry. I have my own view of this, which I will share to you as we move forward. But I want to make sure that I'm fair to the ISPs. This is not, and maybe R. Kent, you concur, since you seem to have come from a position that you know what net neutrality is, yet you don't embrace it.
I don't trust the FCC.
Ah, you don't trust the FCC. Well, welcome to the club. that just tells me that you're a human being. Yes, Charlene. Okay, well, that's a great analog, right? You can't get the Dodgers unless you have Time Warner. Why? Because Time Warner paid billions of dollars to the Dodgers team to get a multi-year contract, I think next 20 years, roughly, of having the exclusive right to show almost all Dodgers games, except for ESPN coverage on occasional Sunday nights, and one KTLA game each year. That's all you get. You live in LA? Why? Well, the analog here is that it's their private pipeline, in this case the cable broadband that's going into your house. You subscribe. The problem is other companies don't want to pay the licensing fee. So it really comes down to be a copyright issue. But there is a basic analogy here, Charlene, that it's telling. It's this notion that what you get offered as entertainment options, as the conduit, if you will, the pathway of information and entertainment that comes into your home, you don't control that. So yeah, you'd love to see those Dodgers game, but you won't. Because Time Warner may not be offered in your area, and Comcast and DirecTV don't want to pay the money that Time Warner wants. You don't control entertainment options and media options that come in through your cable system. Right now, though, you do control the entertainment and media options and just informational options that come through you and come from you with respect to an internet connection. Mark?
I was going to say, net neutrality would be continuing to view the ISPs as public utilities.
Well, there's no continuing. There's no continuing.
As they're regulated by the
public. But there's no continuing because that didn't happen and still hasn't really fully happened.
That's what we want.
Right.
There would be a public utility basically regulated to make sure that they're continuing to provide the service.
And that is just maybe just about to happen, as I will discuss. But I don't want to get ahead of ourselves on that. That's all right. You can have it. Yeah. No, I'm okay because he's asking really good questions, and he may be asking some of the others. So. All right, the New York Times is not a newspaper, it's a business. Everything is pretty much everything is a business. But the Dodgers, I think she was trying to use an example of how, I think the idea is that, I think the salient point here, Mark, is that we don't have control. We don't have control when it comes to things like the television connection that comes into our house. But we still do have control. We still do have control, despite the best efforts of the FCC for 10 years. We still have control over that internet connection. And despite the DC Circuit and the Supreme Court. And the best news is that the FCC now is on our side. All right? But there's a gray lining to this, which I'm going to talk about. But I want to make sure we just understand here how important streaming is, and it's just going to be more and more of it. Everybody's iPhones or smartphones are now plugged in, and they're getting better and faster as Apple will have you, you know, Apple's going to have its internet TV rolled out. That's going to use your bandwidth. Yes? Ah, okay. That's no streaming. Streaming is this. Streaming is anytime you are, it's also sometimes referred to as live entertainment. You watch a video, you go on YouTube, you watch a television program on the internet, you stream. You look at a video on Facebook, you are streaming. There can be uploading, so you can have your own cam if you want, and you know, and stream into the internet, and you can also download streaming. Most commercial services, of course, are downloading. Kathy?
One way to think about it is streaming is you don't have full thing on your computer all in one piece. You're getting pieces of it, you're sending it to the internet at a given time.
But for purpose, yeah, so it is data intensive. It's the downloading, by the way, is data intensive, but it's asynchronous. You can do it at your time, you know, so you can download overnight when there might not be peak. But the thing to think about is the ISPs know when it's prime viewing time. They know when the students get back from their classes. They know when you're home from work in each time zone. Why? Because streaming goes way up. And people like the internet right now because it's a lot cheaper than buying service from a cable company, with or without the Dodgers. It's much cheaper. But that's part of the challenge here for us going forward. Yes? I'll be happy to pass this around. It's called the Sanveen Report, 2014 and 2015. Yeah, I've got lots of little interesting things, and I made about 10 or 12 actual report and orders for the FCC that have been edited from the 350 pages down to like 6 by me. So, but yeah, it's number one for peak application periods in North America. Facebook, number one, coming in at almost 20%. This is 20% of data traffic and broadband. Just Facebook, number two. What do you think number two is? YouTube, right? Number three, Netflix. Netflix is, Netflix is basically one of the biggies. But Hulu's also big. And HBO Now is going to be big too. And even my family, when, you know, I do have Time Warner, so when we're watching Dodgers games, sorry. But when we're watching Dodgers game, we watch them on our iPad. We're not watching it through the cable connection. We're watching it over the internet. Why? Because it's more convenient. My son has never seen my television work. He doesn't even think it works. And he's 8. He doesn't have any clue. He once casually mentioned to us, he goes, "What's wrong with the TV?" Because he just assumed that, he actually didn't even ask me. He goes, "You know, he was telling somebody else, actually, that was what it was. He goes, "Yeah, no, the TV doesn't work." He just assumes it's not working. It works great after he goes to bed. But when he's awake, we use the internet because our cable provider provides us with remote access by the internet. But again, that costs money in the view of the ISP. Now, in this case, my internet service provider is the same company, so they're happy for that. And they'll make sure, if in a proprietary world, that that gets privileged. They might decide, well, forget about Netflix or forget about Hulu. That's the challenge that lies ahead. But it's a challenge that all of us will have to deal with. The IRS no longer gives out, at least in my town, forms at the local library. I can't go to the city, the library. They now have a little sign saying, if you'd like forms, go to irs.gov, forms. Okay, and the IRS expects that. They want you to file your taxes online. E-filing, of course, as you probably all have heard. That's what they prefer. Saves them money, but it costs bandwidth if people start to do it, and people are starting to do that. It's a big deal. People put their loans on. Click in there, and it'll take you to loanmark.com to try to get a loan. Buy their tickets. We have grown increasingly reliant on the internet for our transactions, our banking,
gambling,
you name it. None of these edge providers pay for that privilege of using that pipeline. And that's what the ISPs are crowing about. They see it as the equivalent of an all-you-can-eat buffet. And the problem with an all-you-can-eat buffet, in their view, is that there are just a few of these edge providers, that are going and picking out all the best foods. They're taking the filet mignon, the lobster, or Newburgh, or whatever. They're definitely hoarding all the seafood choices. And you're left, you know, with the barley, the grains. You're not getting the benefit of this fast connection because these few sites are hogging it. So they see themselves as the great emancipator of the internet. Stick with us. We'll take good care of you. Why? Because we'll guarantee you'll get fast access to certain sites. They'll be our favorite sites. But you'll want to use it, and it will save you money. That's the issue. It will save you money in their eyes. Oh, but that goes without saying. It will make them money. Yes? I didn't say that they'd save. I said they will say that it will save you money. It actually, to be quite honest, it really depends on what I would call, for want of a better term, the greed factor. And whether there is enough competition for broadband to actually be an incentive to the marketplace for them to maybe give you a sweetheart deal. So I ask my students in telecommunications law and policy every year for the last few years. They all come out very much in favor of net neutrality, very strongly so. And then I change the polling question, as pollsters often do. And I say, well, how many of you would accept this brave new world of favored sites? Not all sites are favored, but some sites would be blocked. Jet.com would be blocked. Hulu would be blocked, but you could go into Netflix because Netflix is paying. How many of you would accept that if it meant a $20 discount each month? Well, you wouldn't. But a student, I watch them sit there and look. Some of them look around like they're afraid they're going to be accused of being a Quisling or something, you know, like a turncoat. But they're thinking about it because now they say, oh, $20? I say, well, how about if it were a $40 reduction in price? They start to say, well, I don't know, maybe I could live with just going to Amazon.com, but not BarnesandNoble.com. When was the last time I really was at BarnesandNoble.com? Millennials, the kids, really think about these financial issues. It's not in their view. Why? It's not a public, this is not a First Amendment issue. This is not a public pipeline. Only in November of 2014 did perhaps the government's best telecom lobbyist, a guy named Barack Obama, make a video that said, oh, we should treat it as a public utility. The FCC was resistant to this idea, so much so that it went up to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court, in a case called Brand X versus the FCC, sided with the FCC. But the FCC had a change of heart when the Obama administration came in. And they started to say, well, maybe we should look more seriously at the idea, not of net neutrality, but of a two-tier system. That's what the FCC did. I call it old FCC versus new FCC. Okay? Old FCC from roughly 2003 to 2014 made it clear that unlike what Mark had said, it was not going to be a telecommunications service. It was going to be called an information service. Now, these are terms that are actually defined in the Telecommunications Act of 1996. And I promise there's only one little provision of the Telecommunications Act that I've excerpted in on the slides. I'm not going to throw a lot of the statute your way. But I am going to tell you how the statute was interpreted. A telecom service, well, that's like the phone company. That's regulation. That means you can be regulated by the FCC. An information service is not about the pathway. It's about providing you with some type of information. It could be for media or entertainment. So Amazon.com, for example, would be considered an information service. They're not providing you with the connection with that pipeline. But the FCC during the Bush era very much said, no, in our estimation, this pipeline is going to be considered an information service. They said, really? Yes, the pipeline itself that goes to a splash screen, if you have like Roadrunner, these were the ones that were very popular at the time, you would go to that internet service provider's splash screen, the first screen, well, talking to a computer group, you guys know what a splash screen is. All right. That would all be an information service, not subject to specific regulatory authority by the FCC. The FCC said the only type of authority, maybe, would be general authority. You know, like we want to make sure that they're not misusing electrical circuits, technical aspects, network management. But they weren't going to touch any issue that had to do with the content going over that pipeline, which they consider to be proprietary. Well, the new FCC had a change of heart. The new FCC, as I mentioned, prompted by none other than the president himself, issued this report and order in 2015. The old FCC, even as late as 2014, May of 2014, just a little over a year ago, had said, well, you know, net neutrality, we're not for it. What we'd like to offer is two-tier service. As long as you enter into what's called a commercially reasonable contract, if you're an internet service provider, if you're Comcast, we're okay with that. You can slow down other people's connection. You can provide a fast lane. Think of it as, you know, an HOV, or maybe better yet, a fast track lane on what would otherwise be a freeway. Yeah, they pay the money.
give them a faster connection. That sounds cool. What's wrong with that? Well, as it turned out, when they proposed these rules in the summer, in May of 2014, they had what's called a public, that's probably me doing it, a public comment period over the summer. That public comment period received more comments than any other proposed rulemaking in the history, 80-year history of the FCC. More people spoke up, most people expressing their concerns, some of the very same concerns that I'm hearing tonight. And the FCC said, okay, we're going to have to rethink this two-track, this two-tier approach. But they still weren't even totally on board. And yes, as we mentioned, I was talking with Kathy, there is a political dimension of this. Anytime there's big money associated with something, you should expect a political dimension because there are lobbyists. And there are many more lobbyists of industry, of the conglomerates that basically provide internet service. Although there are lobbyists for the Googles of the world and for Facebook and other edge providers because they see this as a risk for them. But the lobbyists, they were fighting and there was a big issue on Capitol Hill. Then the president in November of 2014 said, it's time, let's make it a public utility. And he urged the FCC to change course. The FCC did that, precisely did that in its open internet order. They don't use the term net neutrality. They use the term open internet. And if anyone wants to have a copy of this, you can pass it around. I'll put. And if you didn't get one and you'd like to see my edited copy, I have my email address at the last slide, and you're welcome just to email me, and I can send it to you. You want to have a break? Continue or break? Because I'll go either way. All right. You will see that we're going to move to the big. I think the time for me the break is when I really turn up the tension here, when we start talking about how this is what this is going to cost you. Yes. I could certainly talk about. Yeah, I mean, there's. You want to repeat your question? All right. Oh, I think he wants to talk about Sherman J. Pierpont Morgan, and John D. Rockefeller, the notion of the Sherman Act and antitrust, which. I made some allusions to, because the problem here is that, and you can go to broadband.gov, the government's website, because this provision that you have requires the government to actually do yearly research on how broadband is being rolled out. And you'll find that in most towns, there's only one broadband provider anyway. So you don't have any market power. They have an effective monopoly where you live. And because there isn't that monopoly power in the marketplace for ISPs, for service providers, they don't have an incentive to give you a better deal. Yes? This is what I'm saying. There's only one provider. It's because of the infrastructure. They own this. This is not Ma Bell. Most of you have been around to remember the Bell system that was broken up by the government in 1983. This is not government subsidizing telephone wires that go out into parkland or national forests. This is private pipeline that is laid down in public rights of way. There is a public angle here, but pursuant to franchise agreements. They don't see it as their obligation to make it available to others. That case actually was tried and was decided at the Supreme Court. That's the Brand X case. Brand X wanted to be able to rent the legacy carriers, the monopolizing carrier, broadband line into people's homes. And the Supreme Court reversed the Ninth Circuit and said, no, doesn't belong to Brand X. And the FCC says it's not a telecommunications carrier. That's the key to what becomes a telecommunications service. If it's a telecom service, then you get regulated as what's called a common carrier. What's a common carrier? Well, we borrow that term from buses and trains. What does it mean? It means if you pay the fare, you get to board the bus or the train. They take all comers just as long as you pay the tariff, as long as you pay the bill. If you're an information service, you don't have to do any of that. You just say, bye, you know, I don't owe you anything. The fact that the FCC has changed its tune and beginning this past spring, saying now we are reclassifying this as a telecommunications carrier means that they can require, just like a phone company. Phone companies required to take your calls, to have you place calls. If they want to charge you more for it, they will. But they have to take it. And carriers pricing under the Communications Act, Title II, which has to do with common carriers, that pricing for telephone is under the authority of the FCC. So if there's price gouging, if someone's trying to make a fast buck, the FCC will be involved. The FCC can adjudicate this. Not so under this 2015 order. That's the difference here. I call it free internet, but not cheap, in the sense that, yeah, you have freedom now for the internet, but they have the freedom to charge you. Why? Well, this 2015 order did a few things. It banned discrimination. They can't throttle you. Throttling is when they bring you down to such a slow level because of your usage that you basically can't stream anything. Some people actually found this out when they had AT&T customers for their phone service. They couldn't do any streaming. Why? Because they had used up too much. Can't do that anymore. No more fast lanes, no blocking. All content has to be treated the same. The FCC has said so. By the way, it's currently, right now, the regulation of the land. But as you'll see in the last page of the handout, the ISPs, led by AT&T, are challenging this in the DC circuit. They are eager to get the courts to reverse FCC policy. Why? Because they really want these sweetheart deals. They know that they can make a lot of money by contracting out preferred service with these edge providers, the ones they want to do business with. The bad news is that even if they lose in court, it's still going to cost us. It will not be cheap internet. Why? Because of something called forbearance. What did the FCC do in this report and order? Well, sure, they said no discrimination. You cannot treat one site differently than another. You cannot treat one user differently with another. Everybody has to be treated equally. Yes. Everybody. No exceptions. But pricing forbearance, what does that mean? Well, normally, as I mentioned, if you're a common carrier like the phone company, under common carrier regulations, the FCC has authority to regulate pricing. They specifically, in 27 instances in this report and order, this FCC ruling, said, we will not do that. We will not exercise, we will forbear our pricing regulatory authority. What does that mean? Excuse me. That means that Comcast or Time Warner or Verizon can charge you for the data you use. As long as they treat everybody equally. So you might, well, wait a minute. You know, Monique barely uses the internet for email, but Kathy streams movies every day. She's a total data guzzler, right? Wouldn't we be treating them differently to charge you more? No, everybody has the same. If your usage would be like hers, you would be treated exactly the same. That's part of net neutrality. And that's the concern that consumer groups have now. And it's a real concern. It's a concern that your monthly bill will go up precisely because you do have access to streaming sites to watch movies and television shows, or because you love to post cat videos on YouTube and watch them. Precisely because of that data use, your price will go up. It's already happened for many of you with your mobile phones, right? So how many of you still have unlimited data service? You have unlimited data? No. Oh, that's sort of good. It's a cool poker move. No.
We did have a test.
What happened?
They
changed their plan. They've all, except for Sprint, they have, yeah. Well, they are coming, but they're changing their plan, and they don't even let you grandfather in as they used to, right? They make you switch. They haven't changed me. And I use Sprint only because I'm one of these people that if I feel there's any type of something is not unlimited, I'm not going to use it because I'm worried that I'm going to go over. I don't worry, at least until they switch. But they are all switching from the day where you could buy unlimited service to days where you pay overages. I mean, they try to couch it and make it look better as share data. But if you are a data guzzler on mobile, you pay more if you use more data. That's what's going to happen now, mark my words, with your home broadband service. It's already started. To give you a sense here, this is the National Communications Cable Telecommunications Association, the NCTA. And this screen, it's hard for you to read. They call it fair broadband pricing. And they believe, they say some Americans are accustomed to paying for what they use. Some broadband providers are developing usage plans that promote fairness by asking high-capacity internet users to shoulder a greater proportionate share of network costs. So they are trying to get rid of what is called universal one-price unlimited service. Can they do it under the 2015 order, the report and order that I just mentioned? Yeah, they can. Have they done it? Not yet. Yes, Mark. Oh, yes. And then one of the reasons for that is that in many countries, it's government infrastructure. It's a government utility. And so that's different. Then you have a stake in the pipeline. What net neutrality is doing is saying, yeah, you can use it as you wish, but they can charge you for that usage. And that's going to be a big deal for some. So what I'd like to do is, I'm just going to finish up and then give you your break, and you guys can also, during the break, just ask more questions. I am happy and I love talking about this stuff, but I will stop right now by just saying, stay tuned, or I could say sort of more ominously, mark my words. The payday is going to come. Okay? Anyway, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Than any other rulemaking in the 80-year history of the FCC. That 2014 opinion said, oh yeah, we could have two tiers of service as long as it's commercially reasonable, as long as you're entering into a deal that is commercially reasonable. In other words, you're not trying to put someone out of business using, you know, the Sherman Act's antitrust market power, but you're entering into a contract to give favored fast-track service, like you're in an airport, you know, the fast lane, the priority lane. That's okay, you could do that under the 2014 report and order. Under the 2015 report and order, you cannot do that. I'll also say that there was no discussion of pricing under the 2014 order because they didn't reclassify it as a telecommunications service, so it wasn't subject to any pricing regulation anyway. So that didn't improve from 2014 to 2015. What did happen, of course, is they kind of went halfway. They took a half step, the FCC. They said, well, now we'll consider it a telecommunications service, which means we can regulate it to make sure that there's no discrimination, that there's net neutrality. But we are going to forbear. We are not going to exercise our regulatory prerogative, if you will, to regulate pricing. So it's a half step. It's an improvement over 2014, but it may not really be as much as an improvement as consumers would hope. Yes?
Can they change their mind in that
forbearance? What's that?
Can they change their mind in that forbearance and actually regulate now?
Can they change their mind? Sure. Why did they do what they did? Well, A couple reasons. The chairman, Tom Wheeler, is a former lobbyist for that same NCTA. The cable television, now known as the Cable Telecommunications Association, and cable companies, of course, have a big interest in this issue because they are the main, along with telephone companies, they're the main ISPs. Could they turn around and say, yeah, you know, that forbearance, we're not going to do that. We're going to actually start to regulate pricing. They could try, but they made also a calculated decision that they want to try to please everybody. And they don't want, they're concerned that ISPs are going to challenge them in court, and it may make it easier for them to be challenged if they're asserting regulatory authority over prices. It also, you know, this doesn't occur in a vacuum from politics. It's much more politically acceptable to Congress if the ISPs can be enriched by all of this. And so, you know, it's really unlikely that anytime soon there's going to be a removal of that forbearance for pricing. Much more of a possibility would be starting to roll out municipal high-speed broadband and potentially even WiMAX high-speed wireless broadband. Some cities have been trying to do this. They've had some degree of success. It's not without cost. But the costs, you know, it's spread over many more people, so your costs are actually somewhat lower. The FCC is not against that, but I don't need to tell you that it's a tough sell in many municipalities to pass either bond measures or you know, an extra couple of cents on sales tax to be able to fund that type of infrastructure. Yet there are some. You know, Philadelphia made some great strides in that area. Yes?
Probably before your time, but probably the most controversial FCC is the one chaired by Newton Minow.
Ah, Newton Minow. I've taught Newton Minow. This is the Vast Wasteland speech from, you know, Newton Minow, by the way, he made that speech in 1961. He's still around today is a, you know, very respected attorney. That was a rage against television content, really in reaction to a speech that was given by Edward R. Murrow in the late 50s that talked about the great hope of enlightenment. What's that?
You're older than I thought.
Ah, my mentor was Fred W. Friendly. So I started working with Edward R. Murrow's producer from, played by George Clooney in Good Night and Good Luck, but Fred Friendly did not look like George Clooney. So I do go way back when it comes to television. So thanks for that trip down memory lane. Question? Yes. Yeah, and they can
block anybody who was against, like, say, if I were for Congress and I wanted to tax Time Warner more, there's nothing to prevent them from blocking my budget.
There's nothing to prevent Rupert Murdoch from saying, you can never go on Fox News and be heard. There's nothing that prevents Time Warner Cable from saying, oh, you want to come to our least access? Forget it. We don't want you. I mean, it's proprietary. The First Amendment only applies against state action. You have to have the government.
But if they're a common carrier.
Okay. If they're a common carrier, then they have that public interest, convenience, and necessity language that is in the statute, the Communications Act.
Yes.
And that's been upheld as constitutional. So that's something, that's a different matter, but it's not really about the First Amendment. These are private companies. They could treat them. They could treat us just like they treat the Chinese.
But now that they're a common carrier, they can't do the equivalent of saying, we're the Bell system in California or whatever. We're not going to allow anybody to call a particular person's political office. That because they're a common carrier, they can't discriminate based on the content.
Correct. They have to take all comers. That's what makes something, you've got it. That's what makes this change, this about face on the part of the FCC, so significant. They are now saying, all right, we've got the message, all you people that commented and wrote petitions. We are going to provide you with a non-discriminatory internet. You can go as long as it doesn't endanger. There are some limitations, as you'll see, that are in the report and order. But with the absence of those sort of safety issues, safety to, you know, from illegal content, but also content that might jeopardize a network, malware, for example. Apart from that, you can go anywhere on the internet with as much speed that your hardware and the network's infrastructure can support. The only difference, of course, is they're not going to regulate pricing like they do with a public utility.
Can you talk a little bit about the impact, or actually lack of impact, because of how they determined it, of net neutrality on the invisible parts of America, those parts that do not yet have broadband?
Well, that's a great question, because the government is very much concerned that most of the of rural America does not have the infrastructure in place for high-speed broadband service. They are making efforts to do that. They are subsidizing wireless broadband in some areas. The big question is, who's going to pay for that infrastructure? Now, the ISPs, Comcast and Time Warner, will say, hey, wait a minute, you're expecting us to lay down the wire, to go into these cities and provide customers with this service? That's fine, but someone's got to pay for that. That's the way they look at it. Someone's got to pay for it.
So, yes, it is a big issue because it may very well be that they're not going to want to make that investment in these emerging markets, that the government may be required to make some type of investment. Yes? So Google in Kansas City, Missouri and Kansas City, Kansas, has put together their own proprietary high-speed internet. It has worked wonderfully. The technologies are out there. The technologies to provide you with great broadband, high-speed broadband access using radio spectrum. It's there. It could be done. Some of you use the internet to enhance your phone service in your house. It's the same idea. You can have small routers that use low power spectrum transmissions, like a garage opener, that can transmit this content and relay it. And because it's low power, you don't have the problem with interference that you have with television or even CB radio. Yes? They don't have, by the way, you don't have to take the modem from them. You do have to take, right now, their cable box, but not their modem. So you can save money. We do not use, we have a better quality modem than the one that our ISP, Time Warner, provides for us. And we don't pay a monthly fee for it, so it's much, much less. It paid for itself after 3 or 4 months. Yes?
Yeah, I think on the Marina Peninsula, and I have AT&T, and I, every time somebody calls me, it would knock off, and I have to walk inside.
AT&T mobile service. Okay.
Yeah, to call somebody, you get a people with an AT&T, has no tower on the Peninsula.
Right, so if you have an internet connection, you can go to AT&T and get what is essentially a booster.
Yeah,
you put it. Well, it used to be that they would give it to you. AT&T charged $140. Sprint gave it for free. And my father still has one in his house. I no longer need it because when I got the iPhone 6 Plus, it picks up the signal much stronger, more strongly where I live. But yeah, it's, you know, you'd have to pay $140. You could try to convince them. I remember for my wife, I went over to AT&T's office in Culver City, and they wanted to charge that, and I bought it, but it was interesting because we noticed we did not have AT&T cell service inside the AT&T store. So, just goes to show you. Yes?
I'm wondering if you talk about any more preventive service. I live in a residential area, apartment in South Bay. I ordered business class for my broadband and landline.
Mm-hmm. No, it does. I mean, there's a reason we call that broadband, right? Because it's a broadband. And yes, for Time Warner Business Class, they will give you a better connection, but you're paying for it.
Yeah, also, they said, you know, I'm sending packets to the packet switching network, and they said in for business class customers, the packets get priority. So the way I have real fast service, and their technical support of the phone is excellent.
Right, but that's an infrastructure issue. You're paying for faster hardware, and you're still allowed to do that. But the internet that you're going to, the edge providers that you will go to, it will be just the same. So where you're getting the benefit is you maybe have a higher capacity than another user of a residential service. But the residential customer will be able to go on the internet just as you can and go all to all the same sites at
at whatever their fastest speed is. So the ISPs under net neutrality, they're not going to guarantee that everybody's going to have the same speed, because then you're playing the lowest common denominator game, and the person who has the slowest connection then has, it becomes the bellwether. All right, well, you know, Mary's only going at this speed, so everybody else, you got to go at the same speed because we can't discriminate. No, you can still do that, but that becomes a hardware bandwidth issue. Oh, I'm actually good. Thank you, though. That's very considerate. I had this, you know, nice good Lipton tea. That'll keep me fired up to around 2:15 or 2:30 this morning. But that's fine. I've got a novel that I'm looking forward to finishing tonight. I just can't remember the name of it. I'm having my own little moment. Yes.
One other thing, you may have left some people with the impression, edge providers or content providers, however you want to call them, they do pay for internet access, and they pay for their percentage of bandwidth.
No, but they say that they're not paying their, they're saying they're not paying their share, but that they're paying, they are paying for sure, but they're saying based on the total amount of usage of the network, all right, based on the total number of users, they should be paying more. Now, you could do that. You could say, just so you know, there are a lot of, the ISPs say, you know, it doesn't have to, you don't have to be charged any more with consumers. Let the edge providers pay more, all right?
Yeah, that's what they're trying to do.
Right, but what happens, this is what I tell my students, say, oh, okay. What do you think will happen to your Facebook account when Facebook has to pay, you know, $5 a month because you're, you know, the mad streamer of content on their site? And you're on it 24 hours, 7 days a week. Now, it's probably not you, but it's certainly a lot of my students. Who's going to end up paying for that? It's not going to be Facebook. It's going to be you, either through more advertising or, more likely, through some type of fee. What will it do to Facebook? It could, frankly, put Facebook out of business. So there's a lot of high stakes here. And I think, yeah, you're recognizing a reality here. Edge providers, they don't get this for free, but they're getting the best part in the view of this internet connection. They're getting more than their fair share, and they should be paying more. That's the argument.
That's the ISPs. I mean, it's totally wrong. That's what the ISP trying to
say. No, I would agree. Yes? An edge provider is just someone like Facebook. Another would be a cloud application. It's somebody who is, you go onto, it's like a website. That's basically the best answer. It's when you go to a website to basically upload or download content. That's what an edge provider is. It's a term of art.
I think an equivalent term might be marginal.
In terms of, an edge provider is a term of art that actually means a web application. That's really what it means. The only reason I use that term is that the FCC uses it. So we could just call it the Facebooks and the Netflix and the Hulus, and the LATimes.com website. So any website that you're going to go to, it's the actual application. Correct. They're providing you with some type of internet-based service.
Okay,
that's going to be
it. Because this group is an edge provider also. Because we have a website.
And maybe this
not
should be this.
Right. Anybody who has any kind of website.
That's correct. So, and maybe this is a good place for me to conclude. You know, you're an edge provider. Be nice to Time Warner. Be nice to Comcast. Because they control the costs. They don't control the pipeline anymore. They can't stop people from coming to your website. But if a lot of people are using your website, they can charge, they can force consumers to defray the cost of that connection. All right, last word. The fairness doctrine.
So the fairness doctrine, this will appeal to any fan of 1960s era television. The fairness doctrine was developed in the late 1940s, and during its heyday in the 1960s was actually used only with respect to broadcast television. Famous Red Lion case said that the fairness doctrine was constitutional, but that was only because it applied to broadcast television, which uses public airwaves. These public airwaves, it's kind of like Yosemite Park. They're owned by us, and they're also scarce natural resources. Not everybody can actually get access to the electromagnetic spectrum to operate a radio station. You have to get a license from the FCC. And the Supreme Court in this case in the late 1960s, 1969, said that is constitutional under the First Amendment. So the problem here is there's no use of the spectrum for with respect to this pipeline. It's wired, so it's like cable television. And even if the even if the fairness doctrine existed today, it doesn't, by the way. It was repealed for very specific technical reasons in the 80s. But even if it existed today, it would not apply. It would not apply to ISPs. So I see that Maurice is standing here. I'll take your question offline, and I'll just wind up.